This is Mitchell Dye with Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
Our motoring correspondent Toby Hagen joining us in just a moment. Also, I heard on our news service that this is Mental Health Week, and I thought it was interesting to hear from Beyond Blue that we need to look after our mental health as much as our physical health. How do you look after your own mental health? How do you make sure that that stays in check? I think that's an interesting question that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily have answers for. But we say a very good morning to Toby Hagen. How are you, Toby?
Good, Mitchell. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, this emissions scandal is of great interest to me. Tell us about what the latest is.
Well, yeah, it is. It's rocked on even further. Saturday morning, both Volkswagen and Audi put out statements in Australia that they'd be immediately suspending sales of a whole bunch of their diesel models, so 10 cars altogether. Excuse me. And, yes, all of a sudden you've got, the next step, I guess, in what we're expecting to be a long, drawn-out saga of trying to right this wrong.
And just explain what the wrong was. What were they doing that was contrary to the law or contrary to normal values and decency?
Well, basically, they went out, we think it was around 2007, 2008, when the first engines came on the market. They went out to cheat the emissions scandal, the emissions regulations in the US. So they basically come out and set up a program on their computers, excuse me, that... make it so the car passes the test when it's on, when it's in a laboratory, basically doing the test. Once it goes on the road, it emits a lot more of the nitrogen oxide, so the bad stuff in diesel emissions, up to 40 times more they've found over in tests. So it's pretty big stuff.
And how did they make it so it reduced less in a laboratory? It emitted less in a laboratory.
They basically, it looks as though, all this is due to come out, but it looks as though they activated some of the emissions hardware on the car, so they've activated it so that it actually does all the cleaning and so on. Now, in doing that, it also potentially reduces the power of the engine and or the reliability and fuel efficiency and so on. So it looks like they've done it to make the engine look better overall and be better to drive and all those sorts of things, but still get it to pass the test in that laboratory situation.
And what are the emissions laws in America? Because, for example, there's a big difference between actual smog and the gases that are emitted, which may be odourless and invisible but still have an impact to the environment. So how are emissions actually measured?
They hook the back of the car up to, so all over the exhaust pipe, they hook it up to a machine or a sensor that then analyses what's coming out. The US is very, very strict on the noxious gases coming out of the exhaust. So the nitrogen oxide is the one that they're really, really serious about. So they have levels or standards that are about half the level of Europe, which already has pretty strict standards. So America has some of the strictest emission regulations in the world. Europe does it a little bit differently. Europe very much looks at carbon dioxide. They're trying to reduce carbon dioxide, which is the greenhouse gas, the thing that's been blamed for a lot of the global warming. And in doing that, it effectively encourages the take-up of diesel, which is why passenger cars in Europe, so many of them are diesels. More than half of them are diesels, whereas in the US, a tiny percentage, less than 1% of passenger car sales are diesels. So it's it's a very, very different market. And as I said, the US really likes to push back on those noxious gases that come out. You go to somewhere like California, which is car central. Everyone's got a car there, or sometimes more than one. And they really, really are really strict there. So they make sure the emissions are top notch.
And what are Australians' emission laws like compared to Europe and the United States?
Ours lag the whole lot. we run roughly along with the Euro emission standards, but we're years behind. So we're 3 or 4 years behind where Europe is. So we implement the same ones, but for instance, Europe has now implemented the latest standard, which is called Euro 6. We're only implementing Euro 5 in November next year. So it's we do run a little bit behind the rest of Europe. Sometimes we get the advantages of it because a lot of the European cars in particular that are sold here meet those latest emission standards, but often, with other vehicles, they don't necessarily meet it.
Well, that was my next question. I mean, is it common for them to design the same car and then have that worldwide, or would they have a different engine system that emits more for Australia and then less for Europe?
Look, there's a bit of both. With part of the Euro 5 emissions for diesel, there's been things called particulate filters. So it's a self-cleaning filter that goes in the exhaust system of diesel vehicles. Toyota, for instance, has only just fitted a particulate filter on its first car, which is the Hilux. So the Hilux Ute that's going on sale this week, or when I say last week, sorry. That car is it has a particulate filter, but Toyota's very much dragged the chain. They'll put them in all their diesels by November next year because they have to meet the new standards. But there's an example of a car maker saying, okay, we don't have to do it yet, we'll wait till the regulation says we need to. Whereas other brands, for example, whether it's Land Rover or BMW, Mercedes-Benz, all those sorts of brands already have those particulate filters on the diesels that are sold in Australia. So it's it sort of depends on the car company, whether they think it's worth saving the money or developing a new tune for a different market, or whether they're just happy to have an all-for-one approach.
And how does this scandal affect Australia? I mean, are the sales going to be different here, or is pricing going to be different, or how is it going to impact our market?
We're still waiting to learn all about that. Volkswagen is saying they're going to come out this week, later this week, and make a statement in terms of how they intend to correct the cars that are on sale, if indeed they need correcting. The suspicion is they do, and the suspicion is that it'll affect somewhere in the region of 40 or 50,000 vehicles in Australia, all of them diesel. So and it's across three brands, Volkswagen, Skoda and Audi. Mm-hmm. So they all share the same engine technology. Once I guess Volkswagen globally determines what they're going to do to fix these cars, you would imagine we'll get the same fix implemented here. But it depends what that is. And obviously, as I said before, there's a potential here that whatever happens, the cars may not drive the way they did previously. Now, we're still waiting to learn all of that. But if they don't, I would imagine then there'll be a few people calling for compensation, saying this isn't necessarily the car I bought.
Which could be a massive problem for those manufacturers. Now, looking at the sales of different vehicles, you're thinking that a Ute could be the best-selling car on the market next year.
I reckon it's a fair chance. So the Hilux that I mentioned earlier that went on sale last week, it's for a long time, almost 20 years, I think, been the best-selling Ute on the market by a fair margin. It is a very, very dominant vehicle in its class. They're saying they're going to sell more than 40,000, and I suspect it might go a little bit up on that, maybe 41,000, 42,000, 43,000. Now, to put that into perspective, the car, over the last 4 or 5 years, the top-selling car in Australia, I think it was 2011 and 12, it was the Mazda 3, and then the Toyota Corolla took over, and they've all sold in that low 40,000 bracket mark as the best-selling car in the market. Now, this year, the Mazda 3 is down more than 10%. It's come off a little bit because the CX-3 SUV has taken its place to an extent. The Corolla is down slightly, almost 3%. So you add up all these factors and say, well, hang on, next year, there's a very good chance that a Ute, the Hilux, could be top-selling car on the market. So it's an extremely different market that we're looking at these days compared with, you go back 10 or 20 years, and it was always a race between the Ford Falcon and the Holden Commodore. Those ones are a fair way off the podium at the moment, and it's down to imported cars, and as I said, a Ute looking good.
And of course, with the Ute, is that just because people are builders and tradies and they're buying more Utes, or is it the fact that more people that aren't involved in those industries are just buying Utes because, as we've talked about before, the benefits of having a Ute, very practical.
It's that latter factor that is making it happen. So, you know, obviously the tradies and stuff still buy them as tool or trade vehicles, but you're very much getting another batch of people coming through who think, hey, this car does exactly what I want. It can go off-road, I can throw stuff in the back, whether it's a mountain bike or a surfboard or whatever. It looks good, it's got 5 seats, so they use it as a family car. So it's got all these things in its favour, and a lot of people are saying that is a perfect car for me. Plus, they can tow. Australians love towing. We have one of the highest rates of towing in the world. The new Hilux can tow up to 3.5 tonnes, so it's set for the world's biggest caravan and horse flight and whatever else. So it's a multifunctional vehicle. I heard someone describe it as it's almost like the Swiss Army knife of cars. You know, it's not perfect, but it does a lot in a very, very good package.
Now, there's been another airbag recall, or the same airbag recall has been applied to more cars. So who does this affect?
This latest one affects Mitsubishi, so it's we're looking at just under 60,000 cars. The Lancer produced between 2003 and 2008. You look at those, the year range, for example, and a lot of those cars won't even be on the road anymore. They will have either been crashed or just, run out of puff and gone to the wreckers. So, but it's still a lot of cars. They'll still be fixing a lot of those vehicles. It takes that airbag recall up to something in the vicinity of 900,000 cars just in Australia, and we're looking at more than 50 million cars globally. So, this recall just bubbles on. It's for the same problem that all the other cars have had, which is the airbag inflator, which is an explosive device. They've found that it's when the airbag goes off, instead of inflating in the right way, It can explode and send metal shrapnel around the cabin, and potentially that shrapnel can injure or kill people, which it has done overseas. So it's it is a serious recall, and there's another 60,000 added to the tally.
So if you own one of these vehicles, will you be contacted, or you've really got to do the homework for yourself?
Look, if they've got your details, the problem with cars like that up to 12 years old is, you know, the vast majority of them will be second or third hand. So finding those people can be a challenge, because often those older vehicles don't get serviced at the manufacturer dealership. So all of a sudden you're trying to find them is challenging. There are obviously they'll potentially take out ads and those sorts of things. They have to comply with what the ACCC says in terms of trying to contact those people, and it'll go on the ACCC website, which they've got a specific website, which is recalls.gov.au, which has all the details there about all the vehicle recalls. So it's a way to figure out whether your car's impacted.
I don't know if you've seen a particular video on YouTube of a person sitting on an airbag sort of as a bit of a prank, and then he literally gets almost thrown up towards the ceiling. I mean, they're quite powerful, aren't they?
Oh, they're hugely powerful, yeah. I mean, they have got explosives in them, and it's a very, very, it's basically like a gun going off in terms of the noise and so on. I've been fortunate enough not to have one go off while I'm in a car, but I've seen them set off outside the car. I watched one, if there's a recall like this, for example, when they take the old unit out and put the new one in, when they go to send all those components back to the manufacturer, they actually have to explode them all before they send them, because the courier companies or the truckies don't want to carry them as secondhand explosives, basically.
Wow.
So they got these beds that they stick them on and just let them all off. And I've seen that happen. And it is, as I said, it's the noise, the ferocity with which it inflates and deflates. I mean, you're basically at the blink of an eye stuff. So for those things to go off, it is a very serious thing in the car, and it's. Now, a lot of people, there's been a lot of reports of minor injuries from airbags, so things like broken noses and cut lips and that sort of stuff, extremely common because of just how quickly they pop out.
Amazing. And there's a new Commodore on sale this week?
Yeah, an update for VF Series 2. It's the last of the Aussie-made Commodores. The big news is with the V8 engine, so it now gets a 6.2-litre V8, 304 kilowatts of power, the most powerful standard Commodore that's ever been released. And it sounds the business. They've done a lot of work with making it sound very good in terms of big beefy V8 noise. They're expecting the sports models to sell very well. The big unknown here is just how many they'll sell over the next couple of years. There'll be a lot of people wanting to grab one of the last ones and say, hey, I got one of the last Aussie-made Commodores. And, I imagine there'll be some sitting in garages almost like a museum piece, just waiting to be shown to the kids in 20 or 30 years. It is the end of an era.
So there could be some big sales just for sentimental value.
Oh, absolutely. And that's something Holden doesn't know how to predict. They've got it. They know this is going to happen, but they just don't know to the level. And it's never been done before in Australia. So it's, it is covering new ground, and exactly how many they'll sell is so up in the air. And I suspect the percentage, well, even Holden saying, we think more than half could be V8s, which is quite astonishing when you consider how many they still sell 2,000 or 3,000 Commodores a month, and for half of those to be V8s, it's pretty big. They're as the car gets towards 2017 is when the end of production is slated for, and I think that'll be a big year with people trying to snap them up.
Amazing stuff. Well, Toby, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Very interesting topics. We'll speak to you in a fortnight.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mitchell.
Good on you, Toby Hagen there from Wheels Magazine, our motoring correspondent.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Day. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.